This is The Beat, a podcast series that keeps you in the know about the latest community policing topics facing our nation.
Hello and welcome. My name is Ismael Cotti, and on behalf of the COPS office, I would like to introduce you to Ernesto Archile. Ms. Archile is a special assistant at the Office of Public Engagement at the U.S. Department of Labor. Today, Ms. Archile is here with us to discuss the Department of Labor's work on labor trafficking and the importance of knowing the indicators to better identify trafficking victims. Ms. Archile, please tell us about the work you and your colleagues do at the Department of Labor to address labor trafficking.
There are three main buckets of work that the Department of Labor does in the area of labor trafficking. The first is around law enforcement cooperation. The second is around victim services, particularly in the employment and training field. And the third is around transnational monitoring, technical assistance, and research. And I'll just briefly describe each of these, and we can always provide more information in greater detail down the line if anyone's interested in reaching out to us directly. In terms of law enforcement, the first thing I need to do is make clear that the Department of Labor does not actually investigate or prosecute trafficking in person directly. Rather, we partner with federal agencies and provide our assistance in the course of trafficking investigations as needed. In addition to which, we investigate and do litigation around underlying labor exploitation that doesn't rise to the level of criminal trafficking, but that is an integral component in the overall phenomenon. So our law enforcement agencies are charged with enforcing the United States labor laws, including the Fair Labor Standards Act and others. And collectively, our wage and hour division protects over 135 million workers in 7.3 million establishments. And in the course of doing that sort of enforcement work on civil labor law, they sometimes can be the first set of eyes and ears to detect a potential situation of trafficking, at which point they refer it to federal law enforcement partners. We also participate in what are called ACT teams that have been, their pilot project has been set up, funded by the Department of Justice, as well as local task forces. And in those, we participate alongside federal and local law enforcement. One of the main roles that our enforcement folks have in these kind of this cooperation is to help calculate the restitution amount that's owed to victims or survivors of trafficking. Because our investigators are used to calculating wage theft and related issues, they have forensic accounting skills and they have interviewing skills that come in very handy in some of these investigations, particularly, as I say, to help calculate the amount that a victim is due in terms of restitution. And in addition to this, our Inspector General investigates fraud and abuse related to the Department's foreign labor certification programs, as well as non-traditional organized crime threats that may jeopardize the integrity of those programs. In terms of victim services, we have a mandate under the Trafficking Victims Protection Act to provide training and employment services through the network of almost 2,700 American job centers around the country. As you know, at the sort of tail end of the victim services continuum, it's very important that a survivor of trafficking be provided with the tools they need to be able to find gainful employment and sort of stand on their own and reintegrate into society in a healthy and self-sufficient way. And employment and training services are just a critical part of that. Our partner agencies throughout the federal government fund a range of programs that include employment and training. But sometimes at the end of those programs, if the person has not yet found a job, they may need to be cycled out and referred to local resources. And so our American Job Centers are one such resource, and we've been working really hard to enhance the ability of that system to provide services for victims, and also working hard to let folks out there know that we exist and that they can refer people to us. So one of the things we've been doing to try and promote that is to generate a kind of informal employment conversation conference calls that we've been hosting, and where we're trying to essentially engage the victim service community, ask folks to weigh in on perspectives like what are the common barriers to employment that survivors of trafficking face, what are the difficulties in providing employment and training services, and what are some promising practices that are out there. We've also provided guidance through the Workforce Investment System, that's the network of American Job Centers, to try and better enhance their ability to provide these services. And then real quick, on the transnational front, we have an International Labor Affairs Bureau who is charged with maintaining two very important lists. One is called the Executive Order 13126 list, and the other the TVPRA list. And both of them essentially list source goods and source countries primary visiting source countries that we have reason to believe are made with either forced child labor or forced labor in general. So the executive order list is forced child labor, and it's a subset of the TVPRA list, which is forced labor in general. And those are produced through a series of consultation with information ranging from nonprofit organizations to, you know, State Department, embassy input, and just a terrific team of really talented people that work really hard to identify these things. In addition to that, we produced a TDA report. It's called the Trade and Development Act Report, which is focused on the worst forms of child labor, of which some are trafficking. And that report is essentially looks at countries that we have preferential trade status with in terms of their efforts to address forced child labor. We also fund technical assistance projects overseas, primarily around worst forms of child labor, some of which focus on forced labor and trafficking. We also fund research. So there was recently a forced labor survey guidelines that was put out by the ILO, the International Labor Organization. That was partially funded by the United States Department of Labor, along with the government of the UK. We also recently pulled together a toolkit for responsible businesses that want to reduce forced labor in their supply chain. And I should lastly also note that there is a consular consultation program which we have initiated with 10 embassies, mostly in Central and South America, as well as the Philippines, to try and better connect with their foreign nationals that are working in the United States and provide them information about their labor rights.
That's great. What are the challenges of identifying and tracking labor trafficking?
Well, that's a great question. There are no real robust national statistics, no comprehensive studies on this phenomenon in the United States. We have information from the International Labor Organization on forced labor globally, but really nothing on labor trafficking here in the United States that's sort of robust or definitive. So that sort of lack of data and sort of gap in the research is a critical piece. Another is that this is a hidden crime. It, you know, it takes place in the shadows and the sort of economic underbelly of the country, oftentimes with workers that may not have either the ability or the willingness to come forward and say that they've been exploited or that that they've been trafficked. You know, it's part of a broader continuum of labor exploitation that happens throughout this country. And trafficking is the most egregious example. It's the sort of the tip of the iceberg, but there's a whole range of exploitation that's going on around there. You know, and you can think from the guys that get hired on, you know, in Home Depots, parking lots, all the way through, you know, restaurant workers, hotel industry. There's a number of industries that have the potential for exploitation, with very vulnerable worker populations that work in them at low wages. And that sort of broader continuum of labor exploitation feeds into the trafficking, and is also, so there's a difficulty in figuring out exactly where that line lies, and for victims or survivors themselves to realize that actually this has gone from being a civil sort of exploitation situation to a criminal trafficking one. It's also sometimes difficult for survivors to self-identify simply because they feel that they need these jobs, and so they're willing to accept this exploitation in order to make the money that they feel they need, or they're afraid to come forward because of immigration issues or because of fear of retaliation. There's this labor trafficking involves a forced fraud and coercion, which can have elements of threats to their family overseas, threats to themselves, and sort of psychological menace and psychological threats. And then the last issue, I think, which is really relevant to this group, is that sometimes local law enforcement is not as attuned or as trained to recognize labor issues as they may be to, for instance, recognize sex trafficking or sex crime-related issues. And, you know, this is one of the things that we're working to address nationwide, and labor exploitation is very prevalent and it's out there, and the more folks are able to sort of recognize when something is, if something doesn't smell right, and know what to do about it, the better we'll be able to identify this.
So why is it so important to be aware of labor trafficking?
Well, abolishing modern-day slavery is really, in my view, one of the great moral causes of our time. In President Obama's words, it is something that ought to concern every person because it is a debasement of our common humanity. It ought to concern every community because it tears at our social fabric. It ought to concern every business because it distorts markets. It ought to concern every nation because it endangers public health and fuels violence and organized crime. And labor trafficking is, of course, a critical and widespread component of modern-day slavery. And the ILO estimates that there are 20.9 million people in forced labor worldwide. Again, we don't know that number in the United States in particular, but the prevalence of this shameful practice is thought to be on a huge scale, even here in the United States.
So what are some signs that indicate possible labor trafficking that law enforcement should be aware of?
So there are sort of three key factors in identifying trafficking in persons: the process, the means, and the end. And so we're looking for elements of force, fraud, and coercion in each of these potential factors. So for instance, processes: how did the person come to be in the situation they are? In the means, how are they kept there, either by withholding their identification, threats against their family, threats of deportation? And the end is sort of, why are they being exploited? What is the end economic benefit to the trafficker? So that's a pretty sort of vague, high-level sort of overview. But examples of force, fraud, and coercion in those categories can be physical violence against the worker, their families, sexual violence, imprisonment or physical confinement, threat of deportation, you know, false promises on recruitment, unreasonable debts imposed and exploited, and a threat of supernatural retaliation. For instance, in some communities, they can be threatened with being cursed or other forms of psychological or supernatural retaliation. And so kind of breaking it down to the most sort of specific things that local law enforcement should be on the lookout for. And there's great resources on this at the Department of Homeland Security's website and several others. But I'll briefly go into a couple of points which is worth highlighting in this context. So in terms of a loss of free will, you're looking for like close monitoring or escorting of the worker, that the worker is not allowed to speak for themselves, that they're being coached on what to say to you, that they have the inability to socialize with others, threats of harm to them or to their families, threats that they're going to be arrested or deported, physical abuse, signs of restraints or of confinement, untreated illnesses, infections or malnutrition, that's something, those are definite red flags. If they don't have control over their documents, they don't have like their passport or their ID or their driver's license, but the employer keeps it in a locked box somewhere else, that's a red flag. No control over their wages, if they're not paid or if they're paid very little, if they're paid less than they were promised, if they're unable to hold or control their wages, and they're paid the money but they don't actually have it, if they've been recruited for one purpose but they're actually working in something completely different or substantially different, substantially more dangerous, unusual living conditions like cramped spaces with multiple people in them, unusual or excessive security, the doors to all the dormitories have locks on the outside would be a really glaring example of that. Unsanitary facilities, the denial of food, water, and medical care, and then sort of excessive or unusual hours, irregular rest breaks on various times. So those are sort of high-level indicators that you want to be on the lookout for.
Great, thank you. So finally, are there any resources the Department of Labor has for law enforcement?
Sure. Well, I should point out that because we don't investigate and prosecute trafficking ourselves, the resources that our sister agencies have may be more relevant for law enforcement. And in recent years, the Obama administration has been taking great strides in monitoring and combating human trafficking. And they've been really multiplying the U.S. government's ability to prevent this crime, to prosecute the perpetrators, and to protect survivors, including providing them services they need to pick up and move on with their lives. So government-wide, I would recommend first and foremost the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, which is run by the Polaris Project, which is a nonprofit, but funded by the Department of Health and Human Services. And that phone number is 888-3737-888. Again, 888-3737-888. And that number is a sort of a catch-all. You can call, you can get technical assistance, you can get explanations about what trafficking is about, you can get referred to local services, you can get referred on to federal law enforcement or local law enforcement. Another important resource to mention is the DHS Blue Campaign, which has great outreach tools, posters, brochures, cards, materials, videos. That's available at dhs.gov/blue-campaign. And here at DOL, we have some broad resources that I think are worth mentioning for that sort of broad continuum of labor exploitation that may not rise to the level of trafficking, but that is still an egregious crime and something that the local law enforcement should be aware of and be able to refer people. And I think the most important tool on that front is the toll-free hotline of our wage and hour division, which is 866-4-US-WAGE. That's 866-487-9243. And that's a hotline you can call and sort of pass on a tip of, you think something's fishy in terms of labor exploitation, You're not sure it rises to the level of trafficking, but it's something that should be looked into. You can also reach out and contact our wage and hour division local offices. You can find that information at dol.gov/WHD. And we also have a series of Know Your Rights videos out there that can help workers know what their rights are and help law enforcement be aware of what worker rights are. That's available at dol.gov/WHD/resources/KYRvideo.htm. In terms of employment and training services, finding the local American Job Center is kind of the first step. If you've got a survivor, you know, that you're working with and they really need employment and training, they can't get access to some Earth services funded by our sister agencies, or they've exhausted those possibilities. The website to go to there is jobcenter.usa.gov. That's a pretty comprehensive website that has a range of resources. You can just plug in your zip code and it will pop out the local nearest American Job Center. There's also links through there to a thing called My Next Move, which is a great career planning tool, which allows a person to sort of say what kind of job they might want to do and figure out what training steps they need to take, what certifications they need, what are the competencies that are associated with that job, and even click through to actual job listings. Then the last thing to point out would be the International Labor Affairs Bureau's toolkit for responsible businesses. It's a great tool to point local employers to if they, you know, feel that they're concerned that they're having forced labor in their supply chains and the things that they're buying, and for corporations as well. And that's available at dol.gov/ILAB/child-forced-labor/index.htm. So those are the primary resources I would refer folks to.
That is great. Thank you, Mr. Artiba, for providing us with your expertise and time today.
Thank you so much.
The Beat was brought to you by the United States Department of Justice COPS Office. The COPS Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems.
The opinions contained herein are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. References to specific agencies, companies, products, or services should not be considered an endorsement by the authors or the U.S. Department of Justice. Rather, the references are illustrations to supplement discussion of the issues.